Seattle U made this wonderful, like they looked at the biographies of like three or four different homeless people. Was that a separate project at Seattle U, or did you guys have something to do with that?
So one of the efforts, Seattle University has a lot of different efforts. There's specific individuals, staff, and faculty in different departments that do that sort of work. One of those efforts most recently was called the Seattle University's Faith and Family Homelessness Project. And so the people who were involved in most of those sort of storytelling and human profile efforts were Lisa Gustavson and Catherine Heinrichsen. So they're in different departments at Seattle University, but that is an amazing project. And along those same lines, I would highly recommend that people check out Facing Homelessness. And Facing Homelessness is a similar effort here in Seattle run by my friend Rex Holbein. And he regularly profiles people experiencing homelessness in ways that show their humanity, their intelligence, their resilience, and how they're really inspirational people.
Wow. You know, I just started a Facing Homelessness in Chico, and I actually think I'm going to play that as one of my favorite clips on the Peace and Justice show, because I did a beautiful interview for Solutions for Homelessness. So that actually was in Bay Area on my birthday. I turned 56 on June 29th, but Seattle actually did it as well. So I had a chance to interview and then do a follow-in interview with Rex Holbein, and I was so impressed with his work and how it fit into this whole, you know, breaking this dehumanization stereotype, Sarah, that I physically started a Facing Homelessness in Chico a couple of weeks ago.
Oh, that's wonderful. So is that
amazing.
Your next step?
It's already launched. We launched
Wonderful.
It about 3 weeks ago, and I've been doing this Without a Roof thing for like 4 years. So I've got a community member that's involved, and then I have a Youth for Justice, youth homeless people that help with the project. So it's a pretty vibrant page. You might want to go out and check it out, because I can't tell you how impressed I was with Rex Holbein, man. Shout out to Rex Holbein.
He's an amazing person, and he does amazing things. So, yeah, I would strongly encourage anybody who doesn't know about his work to pursue it, and I look forward to seeing your website, Bill.
All right, Sarah. Gosh, you know, any closing comments or something you might want to circle back on, or, you know, 1 minute of how to solve homelessness with Sarah Rankin?
Yeah, if I had 1 minute. You know, I think the number one thing I would suggest, probably your listeners, it's sort of like preaching to the choir. I imagine that they are already willing and able, if they haven't already, to review and share the existing studies on the causes, impacts, and manifestations of the criminalization of visible poverty. But that's certainly one thing I would really strongly recommend, because what we know is that laws are not made by themselves. They're made by people who are elected by society generally. And so we really need to continue to prioritize persistent and high visibility community education and awareness campaigns about the toxicity of the criminalization of homelessness. So I hope that if your listeners are interested, that they'll look at the reports that we've written, but also the reports that we cite within our own work, because there's many others who have been working on these really important issues, and their good work is also really worthy of review and understanding. And I also hope that people will pursue more sustained and meaningful opportunities to really get to know people experiencing homelessness. It's that whole proximity thing necessary if we really want social change to happen.
Gosh, I don't even need a thesaurus to know that toxicity is just probably the best word you could have used to describe what I've experienced and people that experience homelessness experience. So once again, Sarah Rankin, it's been a real joy connecting with you. And I think anyone that's only one step removed from Paul Bowden are people I want to talk to. So
thanks so much for having me, Bill.
This is FM 90.1 KZFR Chico. It's 6:04. Listener-supported community radio for the Sacramento Valley, the foothills, and beyond. It's Your Body is made possible by the generous contributions of KZFR supporters and by Friends of the Arts, a state local partner to the California Arts Council. Since 2001, Friends of the Arts have been creating economic opportunity through arts and culture by producing community festival and events, including Oktoberfest, Chico Palio, the True North Tour, the Silent Film Festival, the NorCal Jazz Festival, the Salmon Festival, and more. To learn about Friends of the Arts, visit friendsoftheartsupstate.org. We're also made possible by Dr. Ken Logan, family practitioner. Ken believes in the importance of community radio and encourages other members of the medical community to join the KZFR Underwriting family. That's Dr. Ken Logan, family practitioner. He's also really involved with Shalom, and he does a lot for the community. So this is It's Your Body, and this is Gail Kimball. I'm learning to use the board, so I apologize in advance if there's some little glitches. My guests are Rain and Chris, and let's start by an introduction. Chris, tell us a little bit about what your favorite activist causes have been over the years. You're on mic one, and here we go.
Thanks, Gail, and I really appreciate your hosting It's Your Body tonight. Thank you so much. I am an activist from Chico, and I've been doing peace and justice work and environmental work for a long time through Chico Peace and Justice Center and Butte Environmental Council. I've also been with KZFR for a long time. I started the Peace and Justice program back at the onset of the Gulf War, so in the early 90s. I'm a women's health care nurse practitioner, and I'd like to address some concerns I have about women's health tonight. And I'm just really happy to be here and have you at the board and have Rain by my side here, who's a fantastic organizer.
Yeah. Rain, tell us a little bit about how you came to sit in this chair. And you're on mic three, and away we go.
Hi. Thanks for having me, Gail. I am a longtime activist in Chico. I was radicalized in high school with 9/11 and the invasion of Iraq. And I came to Chico not too long after that. And one of my favorite jobs I've ever had was actually working for a women's health specialist as a parking lot escort. And it felt like a job that really had importance and meaning, and I felt like I was doing something that mattered. So I really appreciate this show existing and women's health specialists existing. And I have my fingers in many, many pies. I'm an activist on many fronts. So, I do, in work in indigenous resilience and sovereignty support. I do environmental work, social justice of many varieties, and homelessness. I've been off and on a member of Food Not Bombs in Chico for over a decade. Many, many things that I'm involved in.
What happened in high school that got you to be an activist when your generation is accused of being apathetic, apolitical, and just involved with social media and signing petitions?
Well, I remember watching the towers on fire. That happened because I live on the West Coast. That happened before I was going to school, and then at school, we were watching it in school. And I lived in Los Angeles, where there was a lot of response happening. And I honestly can't remember how I initially got connected with them, but I got connected with the national organization Not in Our Name, and they were specifically organizing high school students to organize at our various schools for National Days of Action, walkouts, and things like that. So I think it was just a, It was just an organic thing that happened. There wasn't a particular moment I can remember where I said, you know, maybe I should do this. It was just kind of like, yeah, now it's time to do this. So,
got it. Chris, what was the impetus for you to become an activist? Did it come through your health work?
Oh, I think mine started because I was part of the wave of the post-war, and you know, I was living in New Jersey when the Cuban Missile Crisis happened. The fear about nuclear was one of the things that started me. My dad had a library that had a lot about what had happened in World War II, and I understood early on about the genocide of the peoples of Europe, the Jewish people and other people. I just leaned toward justice in my makeup. I don't know what it was because my parents weren't active, but it just seemed like something that I moved into. And civil rights struggle was just happening. We used to see Vietnam on the TV every single night. So I early on became in 1965. I went to a teach-in, and that got me completely opposed to the Vietnam War. I was an activist all through that war and then civil rights. I was too young for my parents to let me go to the South, but I did work on it locally where I was in St. Louis at the time. So, I don't know. It just grew with me.
So it's something that we all have our chemistry of wanting to have equality and being willing to work for it. I think what's on everyone's mind who's listening to the show is the new administration. And I think we all want to know, what can we do when the Republicans control Congress, the presidency, 68% of the state legislatures. So I know this has been percolating in your brain. So, Rain, do you want to take that one? What can we do about the Donald?
Oh, my. Well, that's a big question that I think has many answers to it. I think that my personal philosophy is that regardless of who's in the White House, the most important things that we can do is organize in our communities and be creative in our communities and work on ourselves, work on, confronting our own privileges, biases, and things like that, and learn how to educate ourselves on how to leverage the resources that we have access to, the privileges that we have access to, and learn how to show up in allyship with those that are more marginalized than us. There's going to be a lot of people who are going to be increasingly unsafe with this incoming administration. And, we need to seek each other out, and not just it's not enough to be nice people. We need to be proactive in showing up in allyship with each other and finding out, who in our community in these marginalized demographics, who are they and what kind of support do they want, and how can we show up for them? And as far as, access to healthcare and women's health, women have been taking care of each other for thousands of years. And, it's a really scary thing and an unfortunate thing to think that we might have to go back to, secret illegal healthcare for women, especially reproductive care. But we know that we will take care of each other regardless of what happens, because we always have. In our communities, there's a lot that we can do regardless of what's happening at the federal level. Now, that doesn't mean that we shouldn't keep fighting at the federal level. We definitely should do that too, and lobby our representatives and fill up their phone lines, flood their phone lines, send them letters, all those things too. But on a day to day, I think that what we do in our local community, for each other is the most important.
To piggyback on that, there's a 26-page document called Indivisible. Have you two heard of that one? Mm-hmm. Indivisible was written by, I think, young former congressional staffers. And what they did is they analyzed the tactics used by the Tea Party when a small group of people could really stop legislation and nip a lot of progressive causes in the bud. So for listeners, that you might want to look for that, Indivisible, and they have a Facebook page, and they're forming chapters around the country. And for me, I really like the idea of being part of a national movement. And another resource for organizing that I've read on the plane is Rules for Revolutionaries. Big organizing can change everything. And this is written by two people who were active in the Bernie Sanders campaign. So I think it's a more thorough, because it's a book, not an article, look at how to organize and what to do. And they really emphasize volunteers and working in teams. Chris, do you want to segue into the concern about women's health, since that's your specialty?
Yeah, I've been fairly worried about just about everything, but in terms of women's health, because I'm in and out of it often, still working in women's health, and I'm really concerned that the Title X grant, that is the federal matching grant to our family planning money, is up in March, and so I've been thinking about this in terms of women, and those of you who are listening, it might behoove you, if you can, to get in and get your supplies of whatever your method is. If you're thinking that you don't want to be pregnant in the near future, you might want to look into long-acting contraception. And then I'd like you to also consider an old-fashioned method that I know worked for me and works for many women. The effectiveness rate isn't as high as something like the IUD, but it's woman control, and it's the diaphragm, which our mothers used. Well, your great-grandmothers used. And it's a fairly effective method. And then
you can put it in, 6 hours before having intercourse, so it's not like you have to leap out of wherever you're mad passionately.
Yeah, I think you normally want to put it in a little sooner than that, because you have to put spermicide inside of it. The trick is you have to leave it in for 6 to 8 hours after you have intercourse, but you can put it in, and you can have repeated intercourse if you want with it in place. So, anyway, that's one of the things I've been thinking about. And one of the things that really breaks my heart is the whole issue. I worked for 2 years with the Cancer Detection Program and worked with women with breast and cervical cancers who were trying to make the segue between the screening programs that we have available here in California and the treatment programs. And so I learned a lot during that job. And our program in California for women who are 200% of poverty or under, there's programs that cover family planning. If you're 200%, even if you lose your Obamacare, you can still go to a clinic and get the family PAC grant, and until March, you can get your family planning needs met. But for this breast and cervical cancer treatment, which is state by state, all the states have it, this is also for low-income women, and it's the screening that you depend on, to determine, what's up with your breasts or your cervix. And it's just critical. I mean, women can't afford some of this really expensive testing. If you get to the level where you need a biopsy or something like that, few of us could afford, some of this care. And, of course, the whole Obamacare thing is also pretty scary, too, as is Medi-Cal and Medicare. All of those things could be on the chopping block. So staying in good health, number one, be careful out there. And then beyond that, yeah, we will have to depend on free clinics and, donated supplies. I mean, it's going to be pretty third world around here pretty soon.
What percent of the women's health specialist budget comes from the feds in these kind of programs?
I've never been involved in that side of it, and so I really couldn't tell you. But the state of California has a wonderful very progressive program, I think, that's better than a lot of states in terms of what it covers, because it doesn't just cover family planning. Everyone realizes it covers vaginal infections, sexually transmitted infections, urinary tract infections, for both men and women. So, you know, or warts, condyloma, which is a problem for people, herpes infections, medication for that. There's, you know, it's a wonderful program. And for a lot of young women who are very healthy, usually their access to medical care at all is through their genitals and through, you know, their sexuality and through their needs, oftentimes for family planning.
Got it. And not just young women who are healthy, also people who are really, really low income. Mm-hmm. Sometimes that's the main form of healthcare that's accessible to them, is the free reproductive healthcare services.
Oh, you are so right, because so often I find people with these horrible situations and I'm like, okay, let's let's see where we can refer you or that you're going to be able to afford. And at this point, you know, some of the AMPLA has a sliding fee scale, and we still have the Shalom Free Clinic. You mentioned Dr. Logan as being one of our underwriters.
For people who don't know about that, the clinic operates every Sunday afternoon.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And we do energy balancing and kind of alternative care on Wednesday evenings.
Can you say the address there for people?
The check-in is at 1010 Mangrove behind Access Dental. That's where the medical care is, and then there's psych care and other services at the church around the corner behind the Chico Junior High sports field. I think it's Washington Street.
Okay.
Rain, you've been involved, as I have, in planning the Women's March and other events around the inauguration. And I wondered if you could share with listeners, if they want to turn out on the streets and make a statement, what's available?
Yeah, so Chico has a lot of stuff coming up for inauguration time. We are definitely getting on it as a community. So on Inauguration Day itself, there's a series of activities and actions happening. There's going to be, at the beginning of the day and the end of the day, visibility action happening out on the street, folks with signs at high traffic times to, you know, send the message to the community, you know, that these are some of the things that we want to defend with this incoming administration. You know, whatever issue is closest to your heart, you know, whether it's cuts to education or healthcare or LGBTQ rights or women's rights or whatever it might be. And that's happening from 7:15 a.m. to 8:30 a.m. And 4:15 p.m. to 6 p.m. At two locations, the Raley's area on Skyway and Notre Dame, and then also the intersection of East Avenue and Esplanade. And so that's kind of happening the beginning and the end of the day. And then the Pageant Theater has generously donated their space for a free showing of Democracy Now!'s coverage of the inauguration itself. And then
I think that starts at 9. Is that your understanding?
Yeah, I believe that's correct. That's going to be a space for people to get together to, you know, commiserate and support each other. And, you know, it's going to be a space to, you know, watch it together so that, you know, we don't have to feel so alone in our fears and worries and all of that. And then from there, there's going to be a youth-led march from the pageant after the inauguration ceremony, to the CSU campus, and on the campus at Sylvester's Cafe, there's going to be a youth-centered poetry, spoken word, speak out from 2 to 4 p.m., and there's going to be an open mic there, too, and the whole community is welcome. That's not just for students. And for people who want more information or a reminder of all those details, you can look up on Facebook the NorCal January 20th Solidarity Coalition. That's the NorCal January 20th Solidarity Coalition. And that will tell you all the details of all those things. And then on the 21st, we have the Women's March on Chico in solidarity with the Women's March on Washington, D.C. And you know, we're planning a whole big day of stuff there too. The basic info for the day is to meet at the plaza at 10 a.m. We'll be gathering, and then we'll be marching at 10:30, and we're going to have a march around the downtown area, and then a rally from noon to 3:30 with a wide variety of speakers and local groups and organizations represented on the stage, as well as local organizations and groups tabling in the plaza. So you can get more information on how to connect with groups that exist in our community that are doing work around social justice and civil rights and all of these things, really empowering the voices of the marginalized. And, you know, that's our focus with our rally, too, is to really center the voices of the most marginalized among us.
It's been really interesting to me to watch the process of organizing for the Women's March. And Rain and I have been to most of the meetings. And Rain, I'd like you to comment on that, on this statement. In the Rules for Revolutionaries, the Bernie campaign, they said that it's important to involve everybody, but it's up to project leaders to make decisions and for the rest of the team to align with these decisions. Fast and effective decision making can't happen by consensus, but should be informed by all the smart people we have working on the team across various areas of expertise. And I know you're a believer in consensus, so could you respond to this?
Yeah, I absolutely disagree with that statement. I'm also
me too.
I'm also not a Bernie supporter or fanatic. I never was, and it's nothing against him personally. I don't even know him, but I've seen a lot of people, you know, decide to follow Bernie Sanders in almost a religious capacity, and you know, not really do anything else besides that. And then when he didn't, you know, win the nomination, a lot of people didn't really know what to do because they hadn't really been doing much else anyway. And so part of the reason that I disagree with that, a big part of the reason why I disagree with that statement, is also why the problem that I saw with a lot of people who were Bernie fanatics is that, you know, big part of the problem of where things are at in the current state of the world is because we've been following that ideology that there's going to be somebody in charge who's going to tell us what to do, and then it's going to be all okay. And that's just simply not true. It might be true for the most privileged people, but it's certainly the opposite of the truth for the most marginalized people, and that's why people get marginalized in the first place. I am a big advocate of consensus process and decision making, and it can be cumbersome for people when they're first learning it. However, the more people get in the practice of using it, the more streamlined it becomes. And consensus process is a way for all voices to be heard in a decision-making process. Voting is inherently violent and silencing of the minority, whoever they might be. And consensus is a way to remedy the silencing of minority. And, you know, even in consensus, people don't always 100% agree, but it's a way to move forward in a way that where all voices are heard, all voices get a chance to voice their opinions. And also, it's a way to really have accountability within a group that's making a decision, particularly around what the driving force, the mission, and the soul and spirit of the group is. I think that our communities and our culture needs a lot more consensus, a lot more horizontal organizing, less hierarchical organizing. A lot of people, including in progressive and liberal circles, default unconsciously to the same people always being in charge, and those same people tend to be white men who are often also heterosexual and cisgendered, and, you know, just unconsciously do not have the awareness of a lot of the needs of people that don't share their privilege.
One of the problems with Occupy Wall Street and all the movements that developed out of that is people said, oh, these meetings go on forever, 3 hours of meetings. I don't have time for that. So how do you address the issue of people not wanting to sit for 3 hours?
There is no simple answer to that, number one. Number two, that varies depending on who's in your group, what your group's goals are, what resources you have available. But like I said, some of these, you know, more egalitarian organizing tools like consensus can be cumbersome when you first start doing it, and they become easier as you go along. Now, that doesn't mean you don't ever have conflicts or issues that come up, even if you've, you know, been practicing consensus for years. But that's a reality that when people make decisions together, there's sometimes conflict. And it's part of the culture shift that needs to happen, where we're valuing each other and valuing each other's input and valuing, collective organizing as much as we're valuing the things that we're gathering to do.
And Chris, you were nodding your head. Yes, we need consensus. Talk about that.
Well, I agree with her because I've seen over and over where strong personalities will take over, whether they're male or female. And with consensus, it does allow everyone to speak and to bring up their concerns. You don't always or sometimes even often get your way when you do consensus, because a lot of times you stand aside, you know, you voice what you need to voice, and then you say, okay, I'll go with this, you know, I can go along with this. But you know, you brought up Occupy, and you know, when I'm thinking back on Occupy, what really brought us in was the weather and the fact that we didn't have the critical mass to have people there 24/7, and that's when we started to recognize the needs of our fellow citizens who are without homes, and they started to move into our encampment. And that's, I think, all the work that Safe Space and Chat have done has come out of Occupy. So Occupy was the parent of activism that continues to this day, because we realized at that time, my God, there's a lot of people on the street, you know, who need housing. And so a lot of good came from it. But yeah, it couldn't maintain its own weight. It couldn't maintain its enthusiasm of the earlier balmier months.
Well, one of the problems that I saw that Occupy had in general, not just in Chico, that a lot of groups have, and why they aren't sustainable, and why they don't last, and why it's hard for them to use things like consensus process, is when you don't have a clear focus and shared vision, it's impossible to actually work towards anything, because you're working towards different things without even realizing it. And that was one of the major issues that the Occupy overall, you know, movement idea had all over the country, was that people had this really vague concept of what they were against and what they were for in this really vague way, but there was no clear focus and there was no clear shared vision.
The 1% versus the 99%.
Yeah, and the 99%, there's a lot of people who were, middle class or even upper or lower class, who decided that they were in the same boat as people who've been struggling in, you know, slums and inner cities their entire lives. And, you know, even those middle class people who decided to join the party of struggle all of a sudden were speaking over those who'd been in this struggle actively for, you know, years and years. And there was this alienating that happened within the so-called 99%, because, again, we have to recognize the privilege that we have and do our own work to recognize our implicit bias and the space we take up, and learn to leverage our privilege and show up in allyship. And allyship means, being humble and shutting up sometimes.
You commented in a meeting that you didn't really like the term progressive. And to me, that sounds progressive. So what does it mean to you?
I don't particularly identify with the term progressive because, in general, I think that it's often kind of feel good without much teeth behind it. There's a lot of folks that use that word, and it's used in these situations and organizations and movements that are often like, you know, whitewashed, more middle class, more, you know, folks who don't experience a lot of marginalization in their lives and are often unconsciously, again, it's not malicious, but unconsciously, you know, ignoring and unaware of the needs of, you know, people of color and queer people and trans people and, you know, marginalized groups like that. So I don't identify with it because of the way that it's used and it's often associated with, you know, more feel-goody stuff that is often ignoring some of the more serious issues.
So if you were going to put a label on your political beliefs, what would you say?
I generally don't label myself, but the closest estimation is probably anarchist.
All right. Could you say a word, Chris, about an event coming up?
Okay. And I must say that back in the day, we still call ourselves radicals. Radical means root. And I always love that term. And then I guess we assume the word progressive, but I don't use the word anarchist because I feel like that's very idealistic, because an anarchist is someone who lives by conscience and expects that of others. And we have a ways to go before, you know, we're all at that place to be good anarchists, although I love the anarchists. I just want to say that we celebrate every year Roe versus Wade decision, that Supreme Court decision of, I believe it was 1973. And this year is especially important since we may be losing our rights to legalized abortion this year. I hope we're not. But we would love you to come celebrate choice and to protect Roe. And this is a benefit at the Women's Health Specialist. There is a small donation charge. It will be January 27th, 5 to 7 p.m. at Women's Health Specialist at 1469 Humboldt Road on the second floor in Chico. And it's open to all supporters of Roe v. Wade. So just wanted to let people know that that's coming up this month.
Great. And people can check on the NorCal Progressives website on Facebook and the NorCal January 20th Solidarity Coalition, to kind of keep in touch so you know all the activism that's going on. Let's say a word about feminism, because the Women's March on the 21st is a feminist activity. The march idea was started by a retired attorney in Hawaii, and she put out on a Facebook page and then was shocked the next morning. There were like 1,000 people who said, yes, I want to go. So my question is, what's the status of feminism in a president who believes it's okay to grab women's genitalia? What do we do about that kind of attitude? Anybody want to take that?
I think he's in big trouble. You know, I think nothing makes women more angry than, you know, abusive comments, abusive actions. It offends all of us. I'm amazed that any woman voted for that man.
The majority of white women did.
Half
of white women who voted for him.
A lot of, yeah.
There's a lot of women who didn't vote at all.
Yeah. But it's still amazing, isn't it? Yeah. So, and more stuff is going to come out about that man. So I just feel like we should just be as angry as we feel like being, as offended as we feel like being, and we should not hold back at all about stating it to whoever wants to listen.
How can anybody not be offended by that guy?
Ring. I think that the fact that half of the white women in this country who voted for him, I think speaks volumes to how much work we still have to do. And it speaks volumes to the fact that misogyny, and particularly internalized misogyny, is very real. We live in patriarchy. We live in a culture that tells us from the moment we are born that anything female or female related is less than, and an object and property and all of these types of things. And those messages are internalized by everyone, including young girls and women. And, you know, this is a perfect example of that, that, you know, women essentially voted against themselves, and their own safety and the safety of their daughters and the safety of their sisters, you know? And so, you know, people try to say all the time, oh, look at all the progress we've made. Well, yes, we've made progress, and we still have a long way to go. You know, my great, great grandmother was a suffragette, and, you know, helped, in the fight for women to get the right to vote in the first place. And I'm sure that if she saw the state of the world right now, she would see, you know, it's a very different place, than in her day. And there is so much work still to be done. And the same goes for, you know, racial justice and all the other issues, you know, that are in our face now, because of, you know, the incoming president. You know, people try to say the same thing about civil rights and racism in this country. Oh, racism is over because we had a black president. Mm-hmm. And that's a big fat lie. And, you know, we're seeing that with, you know, the rhetoric of this incoming president. And we're going to see it more and more, you know, as his administration goes on, that we still have a lot of work to do.
Ain't that the truth?
Yeah.
Chris?
Well, you know, a part of this, I don't know if this is controversial to say, but I think a lot of times women have put their own concerns last oftentimes. And so I think when they voted for Trump, I think they kind of blocked out that part of him that
they were thinking he'd make jobs.
He would make jobs. He would. I think a lot of people align with rich people because they feel like they're going to somehow be able to attach to their coattails, and you know, and that they're going to be able to
trickle
win.
Down doesn't work.
Yeah, true. We learned that in any way, but I just feel like people fail to vote their self-interest over and over and over again, and it's just absolutely amazing to me. And it's not just about our daughters and our sisters and our mothers and our you know, loved women. It's also the men, you know, more people will suffer under this administration, whether or not it stays Trump or becomes Pence. I think we're all going to suffer, and there'll be greater risk of war. This man will have his finger on the nuclear trigger. They are going to ensure that climate change goes as bad as possible and as fast as possible. So we are all fighting for our lives, for all of our children, for all of the generations to come. And I just hope that people might be overwhelmed when they hear me say that. And I know I can say things in a way that can be kind of depressing, but we're all in this together. We'll be fighting together. And so don't be afraid to come out, folks. Come out to some of this stuff. Just get a sense of it, you know. And one of the nice things about this thing on the 20th, and I wish I could be there, but I didn't want to see the inauguration, but to be in this room in the Pageant Theater, to have people who are supportive and caring in this room, I think it's going to be amazing. So I just, you know, I think the people who are doing this organizing right now are laying down really good tracks, and we're going to be able to build this movement, especially if we can honor people in the way that Rain's been talking about, that all voices are heard and all voices are appreciated and honored.
And I think that's the silver lining, is that people are organizing all over the country. And Obama talked about that in his farewell speech, you know, get off the internet, talk to people, organize, and it is happening. So to me, that's a silver lining, and that it will probably lead to Elizabeth Warren being president in 4 years.
I think it's also really important, especially in these times when everybody's safety and access to health care and education and all these things is under attack. You know, I've been saying, you know, things about centering the voices of the marginalized. I think it's also really important to recognize that when we're getting active and proactive, that activism looks like many different things. And accessibility can be a real issue for people. And so even if you can't make it out to one of these actions and be physically in the street, maybe you can't physically leave your house because of a disability. Maybe you have children, small children you have to take care of, or whatever it might be, an elderly parent, whatever it might be. You can still do things. You can still be proactive, get creative. You know, I think that, you know, the internet has been a huge boon to the disabled community, because, you know, folks who can't get out in the street have been able to do things through the internet. And so I think it's important to say that it's not that there's no value in doing stuff on the internet. There is a lot of value that can be done through online work, especially if that's what you have access to. But again, we need a variety of approaches. We need to be creative, and we need to get proactive in whatever ways that we can.
Right. It's Your Body is made possible by the generous contributions of KZFR supporters and by New Earth Market, Chico's locally owned full-service natural grocery market. Open at 864 East Ave, New Earth Market offers grass-fed meats, deli, sushi bar, pizza bar, coffee bar, using only organic milk, huge craft beer selection, wine, supplements, and more. Visit them on Facebook or at newearthmarket.com and discover why New Earth Market is the place to be naturally. It's also brought to you by Bruce Jenkins Insurance and Financial Services. Attention, baby boomers, turning 65, new to Medicare, leaving an employer plan and looking for competitive quotes, Bruce can help and may help you reduce prescription and insurance costs. For answers about Medicare, you can reach Bruce Jenkins at 530-781-3592 or visit brucejenkinsinsurance.com for a complimentary consultation. You're listening to FM 90.1 KZFR Radio. I'd like to switch to Standing Rock. Chris, I know that you were there, but don't feel like you're a spokesperson for the cause. And Rain was there, too.
I also don't feel like I'm a spokesperson for the cause. As a white person who went there, you know, something that was specifically requested of us as white allies showing up there, and in general as a tenet of my activism, I prefer to center and amplify the voices of the Indigenous folks who were there, both in leadership and, you know, in action. We had several local Indigenous people who went out there. So I prefer to actually not speak on it and defer to, you know, folks talking to those Indigenous folks that
what I'm interested in is why it was so effective, because at least it blocked it for a while and it got international attention. People came from all over the country, the vets. So what happened there that garnered so much attention? There's plenty of other causes that are highly significant that didn't. Was prayer and ceremony part of it? Chris, what would you be willing to speak to that?
In the same way that Rain is, I feel like if I talk about the question you just asked, then I'm talking outside of something that I know about. But I would like to say a couple of things about Standing Rock. Is that the struggle continues, and there's a couple of things I want to mention. I spoke to a group of retired county employees yesterday, and I was asked to go there by a Lakota woman who is the head of the Oroville retirees, and she's from Standing Rock, and it was a real honor to speak to their group. But in preparation for that, I found a couple of websites that I think people should still be following. One is Earth Justice, and Earth Justice is doing the lawsuit with the Standing Rock because DAPL, the Dakota Access Pipeline folks, sued the U.S. Army Corps of Engineers when on December 4th they denied the permit to cross the Missouri River. And Standing Rock is asking, as well as the U.S. Army Corps of Engineers, are asking that that be thrown out in court, so supporting that case. Number two was there are a lot of water protectors who still have court cases coming up, and a lot of them have no attorneys and no money, and they should not be left behind. And the group that is helping them is the Water Protectors Legal
Collective.
Collective, thank you. And that is through the National Lawyers Guild. So if people could Google that, and please help out with that if you can. And then the exciting thing for me yesterday was to find out that AB 20 has been introduced in the California legislature, and that would divest our retiree funds, me as somebody who has the what's called PERS. So I'm going to be personally organizing around trying to get fellow retirees to really put pressure on this huge retirement fund to divest from that pipeline money. And and there was something else that I've forgotten, but I'm glad I had the opportunity to say those things, because this emphasis on divestment is extremely important, not just for Standing Rock, but for all the other profit-driven fossil fuel extraction plans that all depend on pipelines and carrying fuel by rail, which is going to be what's happening in California. And those of us who work with Chico 350 are trying to raise awareness about them coming through Chico, Oroville, Feather River Canyon. And so it's all for export. It doesn't help America one bit. All it does is make money for these huge corporations. So that's the black snake and all of its different baby snakes.
Could you just say a word about prayer at Standing Rock, that it wasn't an effective way to mobilize energy and get the word across?
You know, the people of the Lakota, Dakota, Nakota area have gone through many, many, many years with the United States. The Fort Laramie Treaty was 1851. It has been violated many times, and yet they have an effective sovereign nation there. They have a tribal council and tribal leadership that determine how their businesses run. And they have traditional practices and people that practice those things. And those would be the people to ask. So I would encourage you in a future interview to set up an appointment with somebody who could answer the questions better.
Okay, got it. Rain, do you have hope in this new administration? And also, could you add, after you answer that, repeat what kind of events are happening and where people can find out about them in terms of the inauguration?
I think that if I didn't have some hope, that I would not be able to function in a general sense. You know, that's what keeps me alive on some level. But generally speaking, I'm terrified. I'm terrified for myself, and I'm terrified for many people that I care about, and many people that I don't even know, but I still care about. And I think that it's realistic and healthy to be afraid. And I'm still waiting to wake up from the nightmare, honestly. Every day I have a moment where I'm like, this isn't real, is it? Oh my gosh, it's still real.
Anything that comes out of his mouth.
But you know, and I think it's important. A lot of people have been saying, well, this is going to galvanize folks and get people to really, you know, step up. And I think that that's true. You know, it's going to cause people to really band together and get stronger and better organized. And also, in the process, people are going to be hurt and probably literally die. And people already have been within the first 24 hours of the announcement of the, election results. People were being assaulted all over the country, including by children. You know, children assaulting each other in their schools. So it is a really terrifying prospect for me.
Let me just interject that I talked to a young African-American woman who goes to university, a white university predominantly in Washington, D.C., and she told me that after the Trump election, people yelled the N-word at her, which had never happened before. So that's just a small example of how painful this change can be.
Oh, absolutely. Hours after the announcement of the election, there was a man in Southern California who was beaten bloody because he happened to be in a bar with Trump supporters and he was gay. You know, there's all kinds of horrible things that have happened. There was a Muslim man who was actually beaten to death 2 days after the election. So it's serious. And it's serious that we need to get together and organize. And, you know, one way for people to get connected moving forward from that is to show up for, you know, these events on Inauguration Day and the day after. And even if you can't show up, connect on Facebook or through email so you can, you know, stay in the loop and stay connected.
We're trying to form a coalition of activist groups to continue after the inauguration. So people should stay tuned on NorCal Progressives on Facebook.
So if people want information about stuff that's happening on Inauguration Day, again, there's a Facebook group and event page for NorCal January 20th Solidarity Coalition. And there's a whole day of stuff happening on Inauguration Day. It's also a national day of general strike, business not as usual, don't go to work,
20th.
Don't go to school if you can. And then on the 21st, again, is the Women's March on Chico. Gathering at the plaza at 10, march through downtown, rally from noon to 3:30. And for people who want to get more information or involved with the Women's March on Chico, if you have questions, you can email chicowomenmarch@gmail.com. You can go to Women's March on Chico on Facebook. If you want to volunteer and help the day of, you can email womensmarchchicovolunteers@gmail.com. And we are also set up to take donations to help with the march through North Valley Community Foundation. So if you go to nvcf.org, you can make donations to help with the march. And leftover funds are going to local orgs supporting the needs of marginalized folks and women. And I wanted to make a quick correction earlier. I gave the wrong information for Inauguration Day. I had said that the Poetry Speak Out was from 2 to 4, and that was wrong. It's actually from noon to 2:30. So I just wanted to clarify that. And for folks who want to get all the details for Inauguration Day, go to the Facebook NorCal January 20th Solidarity Coalition.
Thanks, Rain. Chris, last word.
Yeah, for follow-up on Standing Rock, I do want to say that I'm subbing on Ecotopia on Tuesday night at 6 o'clock, and at 6:30 I'm going to have Chief Colleen Sisk of the Winneman Wintu, and we will be talking about water. Water is life was the thing that galvanized everyone, and she is the protector of water in our watershed for the Winneman Wintu and for many of us who listen to her. And so I hope people will listen in that night.
So that's next Tuesday.
This coming Tuesday, the 17th, I think it is. So thank you for letting me speak.
Oh, thank you. So we invite listeners to check in on the Facebook pages that you've heard about tonight and be an activist, and we all of us have to join together. So thanks for listening to KZFR, and peace out.
Stay tuned for peanut butter and jelly time.
With a mountain in his step, in search of Eldorado. you haven't found it yet. You might be an old man with his whole life at his back, and you can hear eternity whispering down the track. Or maybe you're a woman or just about to be, and you can feel the generations swimming in your sea. But you know that it's coming surely as the dawn. Which side are you on? Come on, come on, come on, if you're coming. Come on, come on, come on, and which side are you on? Come on, come on, come on, if you're coming. Battle lines are drawn. Come on, come on, come on, if you're coming. Which side are you on? The corporations attacking the natural world, drilling and fracking. Do it with the backing of the president.